Welcome to the Open House Podcast. Conversations exploring life, faith, and hope with Stephen O'Doherty.
Everyone has an opinion, especially if the issue is controversial. We respond to sensitive issues on a pretty primal level, especially if it's something that targets our core beliefs. Dr. Martine van der Kamp from Monash University says that when controversial issues arise, we tend to rely on unconscious biases, biases like confirmation bias, that we've learned since we were children. We collect those biases because, well, they help us navigate a complex world. They help us locate ourselves within a worldview. Martine says that we are all victims of perpetrators of this bias. And we start to stereotype people we disagree with. We denounce their values. We look down on them. How could they possibly think X and believe Y? Well, Dr. Martine van der Kamp, welcome to Open House.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be on the show.
We're all in the habit of making snap judgments, but our snap judgment is not always our best judgment.
Absolutely. I would totally agree with that.
So can you give me an example of what confirmation bias looks like?
I think confirmation bias is one of the biases, and a bias is basically a way of in which our brain creates a shortcut to, instead of really consciously thinking about something, we immediately go to a solution. So if we think about confirmation bias, it basically means that we have pre-existing values and beliefs or attitudes towards many different things. And we try and look for in everything that we read or that we talk about for those values and beliefs to be confirmed. So basically, we have certain beliefs and we look in other aspects of life for those things that confirm those beliefs, and that makes us feel good about ourselves.
It'd be very impractical, if nothing else, to live without a certain amount of trust in things or knowing where you fit into the world and how the world fits into you, if I could put it in those terms.
Yes, absolutely. So biases has a bit of a negative connotation, and I think that it's sort of time to move away from that. I think it is time to acknowledge that biases are actually very useful and very productive. Like, think, for example, about riding a bicycle. If you think about it in detail, it's a really complex thing to do. Once we know how to ride a bicycle, we can basically do this without thinking about it altogether.
So it's as natural as riding a bike to have a bias or to have a preconditioned set of responses to certain stimuli. So you're not saying that it's a bad thing?
No, absolutely not. I think that the values and beliefs that we hold, no matter in what area, whether it is riding a bicycle or whether they are religious beliefs or attitudes, they serve as a purpose, and they define us who we are, and they help us find our place in life, but also in society in relation to other people. So in that sense, values and beliefs are very useful, and we cannot really do without them. It is basically the way that we think and the way that we interact with others are largely defined by those automatic thoughts and beliefs, if you like.
Now, living in a democracy like Australia, or indeed being a global citizen, requires us, though, to have a broader view. We just don't want to associate with people who are only like us. That would be a fairly boring world. And in fact, here's where confirmation bias, as you're calling it, can become difficult, that people are so, shall I use the word, one-eyed, that they can't see anyone else's point of view. And it can lead to some very negative consequences.
Yes, that's true. Take the recent marriage equality vote, for example. There is very different constituencies that have very stronghold beliefs and values about what should be done with regard to marriage equality. Hmm. And we have seen a big debate around that evolve before the actual vote took place. I think that because we have these values and beliefs and they help us define who we are, is in essence a very good thing because it allows us to talk about it from that perspective. But it also means that we hold these values so close that they are also very much aligned with our emotional responses. So regardless of whether you're for or against marriage equality, as soon as you hear somebody else say the opposite of what your beliefs align with, you might feel a very emotional response or a very negative response to that. So we see that these biases come with automatic judgments about the people that have opposite views. And we tend to think of them as lower status, they are less worthy of our attention, the things that they say are less true than the things that we say, because they have very different beliefs that they come from. So the initial reaction might be like, how can they possibly believe the opposite of what I'm believing, because this is what I hold so closely?
Living in a world where we have people with different views requires us to be able to suppress some of those automatic, visceral reactions, doesn't it?
Yeah, so I think that in our current world where information is flowing so freely, we are continuously confronted with values that are very different than our values and beliefs. And there is more issues that we become aware of much quicker than we used to do before. Part of leadership is therefore to recognize what your initial response is to these different values and beliefs, but then choosing how to respond to that. So I think acknowledging those emotions is important to be able to then choose how to respond in second instance, if you like. Just taking a little bit of distance can help you to connect. And I think this is where tolerance plays a very big role. Like, tolerance basically is around, like, how much are we thrown off by values and beliefs or opinions that are very different than ours. So recognizing that another person has beliefs that can be very different to yours does not necessarily mean that your beliefs are not right, or that this person is attacking your beliefs.
Yes, you don't have to feel threatened by someone else's ideas.
Absolutely. And what for me personally the most interesting aspect is that values are called values because they offer value. And I think it is interesting to, if you can check your initial reaction, to then engage in the debate with another person and ask them why they value their point of view. You might not agree with that even after talking about it for hours, but it is interesting to see whether you're actually talking about the same problem or the same issue and what the other person's understanding is of that issue, because that tends to be very different.
Our guest on Open House is Dr. Martin van der Kamp. He's from the Monash Business School, where he's a teaching fellow. As you're teaching business people who want to be leaders and who are leaders, how do you teach them about a better way to interact with their colleagues or to make decisions in the workplace where they are aware of these biases? Does it start with a self-awareness sort of checklist or something?
Yes, well, it's not necessarily a checklist, because if you would look up the amount of biases that we possibly can have on Wikipedia, for example, you would see that there's hundreds of them and that we are trained in them throughout our lifetime. But what we try to do is bring out some of the most important ones and initially just practice a process of becoming aware of our responses in different situations. And teamwork is an excellent example of that. We have a very multicultural classroom. So being confronted with people from different cultures with different habits and values requires people to be more patient in order to uncover how other people see sometimes the same reality.
In leading a team, is it good for leaders to tell people how to operate, or is it better for them to ask questions and lead by inquiry?
Well, I think as a leader, it is really important to acknowledge what the role of your leadership is. And I think it is to, especially in diverse teams, to facilitate the process rather than to direct people what to do. Directing people what to do can be very confrontational for the people in the team, as it does not align with their values and beliefs. So asking questions actually generates a much better discussion and often brings up solutions that you would not have thought of just by yourself as a team, as a team leader. So in that sense, you create the circumstances that facilitate teamwork rather than using your team as a means to extend your personal capacity.
In the mind of a politician, it can appear weak to not know the answer to a question, to not have the policy. Seldom do we ever hear our political leaders standing up and saying, you know what, actually, I'm still thinking that one through, or I'd love to know what people think so that I can inform my own view. When you ask the question, they've got to have the snap 7-second answer. And I wonder if that actually, you know, from your perspective, does that mean we're not necessarily getting the best decisions from these people who come with a political, philosophical bias, and then they have to apply it in order to seem like a strong leader?
Yes, for a politician, it's a hard position to be in. I think that a politician represents certain values and beliefs within society and will act on behalf of the constituency that overall holds those values and beliefs. I think it starts to become difficult as a politician when you're removed from your constituency and you are actually getting a little bit out of touch with what is actually going on the within the constituency to keep connected. And I think that's where the asking questions comes in. If you want to maintain that relationship and want to maintain connected to the constituency, I think there is a time where you need to be that seven-second leader and need to make sure that you can answer that question in 7 seconds, representing the interests and values of and beliefs of your constituency. But there's also other times where you can be publicly vulnerable and say, I do not know this answer at this moment, but I can ask those questions.
Mm.
I can come back with you being better informed. And I think that's what creates connection.
No, I would like to think that we give our MPs permission to do that. But in the 24/7 news cycle that we're in now, we're all just a Twitter rant away from oblivion in the political world.
Yes, absolutely.
Dr. Van de Kamp, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Stephen. It was really nice speaking to you.
Dr. Martin van de Kamp, he's from Monash University. He's a teaching fellow in the Monash Business School, and some of the biases or worldviews that prevent us from having an open mind. We have nothing to fear. Christians are sometimes fearful. I suspect sometimes we open our mouths and what comes out is more because of our fear than our love. And yet perfect love drives out fear and overcomes, so we needn't be fearful. Anyway, there it is.
Discover more Open House podcasts at openhousecommunity.com.au.